are friends in this, and you don't need to look that far to see. In an instant, it's all rushing by. You risk it all to set them free. Seems like time and again, and time and again, must be destiny.
Hello, everyone. This is Pendy.
And this is Paul, also known as EastX Twitch.
Hey, Paul, did you know that I was a girl?
I've always known that, dude. It's quite obvious. I'm glad you're finally coming clean about it.
No. A G-I-R-L is someone who likes to use female characters or avatars in video games. It stands for a guy in real life.
That's needlessly complicated, isn't it, lady?
I mean, I suppose so. Hopefully, I don't run into a girl who doesn't know that terminology who plays as a male character in a Dragon Quest MMORPG who I eventually invite to be my roommate. She would think I'm a girl, but really I'm a G-I-R-L, a guy in real life. I think she's a guy, but she's actually really a flashy Gairu girl, the kind of girl that teased me relentlessly in high school. It would really be awkward at first. I hope that doesn't happen to me.
Well, that's oddly specific. I'm just going to leave it alone for now and go ahead and welcome our audience to All Trades DQ Media Abbey, a Slime Time podcast spinoff where we review various Dragon Quest media, including manga and anime.
We are currently reviewing the 2020 Dragon Quest The Adventure of Dai anime and, for the first time on this show, the Dragon Quest X tie-in manga, Rooming with a Gamer Gal. We'll start with Dai first, so let's trash it up.
In episode 69, The Clash of Love, we start with Mom getting blasted by Albinus, the Queen chess piece's Needle Thousand attack. Albinus then reveals that she plans to eliminate Avon's pupils as an offering to Dark King Vern. She wants him to heal Hadlar, whose body is rapidly decaying, and prevent him from dying. As the fight continues, Albinus sheds her cloak, revealing her slightly different true form. She explains that her Needle Thousand is a Kasiz spell that splits up into many small attacks. Before Albinus can do much damage, though, Mom transforms her Dark Armor Fist, the legendary weapon that she recently got from Lon Baruch. The Dark Armor Fist becomes magic blocking defensive armor and power brass knuckles. Despite her increased power and defense, the queen is still too fast for Mom. Mom decides she needs to use her ultimate technique, the Tiger Shatter Fist, but she can't find an opening to use it. So Mom gambles by pretending to be down for the count on her back. As the queen dashes in for a final attack, Mom shatters part of her armor, striking Albinus all over. This is Mom using Albinus' speed against her since she charged full speed into the shrapnel. The wounds slow down Albinus just enough so that Mom can connect with the Tiger Shatter Fist, blowing a hole in the queen's core. Mom reflects that if the queen had been able to admit to herself that she loved Hadlar, maybe she would have won the day. Next, we see him easily overtaken by Hyunkel and blown over the castle wall into the depths below. Mom catches up with Hyunkel, who is on his way to assist Dai. Hyunkel sees that Mom cares for Pop and is worried about him, so he encourages her to go check on him. The two part ways as the episode ends.
This was a nice episode. Just kidding. This was a great episode. It was very entertaining to see Mam use her dark armor transformed and bring out a new attack. I also really like that it wasn't just her overpowering her opponent. She had to strategize to win the fight. The queen had the advantage the entire time until Mam used her speed against her. Albinus had a great look in her final transformation and some interesting attacks. I really liked how her Thousand Needle attack was rooted from a traditional Dragon Quest spell. It's fun when the show takes general Dragon Quest concepts and makes something new out of them. I like when they do that. This episode was, of course, all about love. The love Albinus had for Hadlar that she couldn't admit to herself. The compassionate love Mam has to care for others. The love Amy has for Hyunkel. And maybe the love Mam has for Pop. She doesn't quite spell out exactly how she feels. However, we do get an admission from Hyunkel that he does have feelings for Amy. We see a little bit of a welcome crack in his cool exterior. Or maybe not. Because apparently there is a difference between the dub and the sub here. In the subtitled version, it's translated as Mam saying, like how Miss Amy loves you. And then Hyunkel says, though I can never reciprocate her love, I can somewhat understand how she feels. Though the last line in the dub is translated as but I still want to be around her. I don't know if this is a mistranslation or in the Japanese version he was trying to be more subtle about the fact that he might have some feelings for her and is trying to be more of a tough guy and be very, you know, super subtle about it, and they wanted to have him be a little more blunt in the dub. I don't know. You really need to look at it and and decide for yourself, because it could go either way as far as I'm concerned. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I would hope that as the show goes on, we'll see what things are leading up to. You know, it is pretty definitive what he says in the Japanese version. I could never reciprocate her feelings, you know, if he's telling the truth. But like,
well,
you
I mean,
said,
he says he could just reciprocate, be blustering. Reciprocate. Oh my God, I can't say that word. He says specifically like her love, but maybe in the next line when he says, I can somewhat understand how she feels, maybe he's trying to imply that, well, maybe I have a little something there, but I don't, but maybe she's just trying to, or maybe he really is just trying to say like, oh, I understand how she feels. I can see her viewpoint, but I don't feel that way. Because you might be right that it's just that and nothing else. And the dub actually says a little more than it should.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, hopefully when they went in, like, I feel like this kind of translation difference is okay as long as it doesn't mislead the audience. Like, as long as it builds toward something where him saying that would have made sense, it's fine. But
that's true. Like, if we see later on that, like, if, you know, he does actually have some kind of feelings for her, then okay, well then that makes sense. It still makes sense how they translated it back then.
Yeah, exactly. But if he never has any kind of feeling for her, period, and he only shuts her down brutally, then it would have been misleading of the dub team. So hopefully that's not how it goes.
We shall see.
About the episode, I didn't enjoy this one quite as much as you, mainly because I find Albinus really annoying. She's some kind of Japanese archetype, and she's supposed to be tragic and cool, you know? But I found her to be more of a jerk than anything. Yes, it's touching that she loves Hadlar, but that's the only remotely empathetic element of her personality. Albinus fights dirty. She can't be reasoned with. More like Albie Nasty, if you ask me. I didn't even find her true form very cool or worthy of being discussed out loud in the story, as it was. Meh. Moving on to the Mom and Hyunkle discussion, Hyunkle is quite noble to suggest that Mom go off and confirm her feelings for Pop. He's putting her needs above his own, which is good. Hyunkle seems to have a thing for Mom, not that he has expressed it very much throughout the series. She did believe in him and convince him to give goodness a chance, so that must have made it a strong impression on him at the very least.
Oh yeah, so I agree with you. Like, he definitely has very strong feelings towards Mam as far as he's concerned with how he evolved into the man that he is today. Because if it wasn't for Mam's compassion towards him, he probably would have stayed with the Dark Army or would have been killed or let himself be killed by Dai. You know, the fact that he is how he is today is definitely in large part to Mam's compassionate love towards other, how she cares for other people.
Yeah, darn it.
So next is episode 70, Victory or Annihilation. We switch it up in this episode with Pop taking on Sigma the Knight. Pop keeps hurling spells at Sigma, who keeps deflecting them back with his Mirror of Shahal that has bounce infused into it. Sigma figures out that Pop is testing out his defenses with smaller spells to look for an opening. With his initial plan thwarted, Pop times two boom spells to hit each other, which makes a big dust cloud and creates an opening to smash Sigma with his extending staff. After using his staff to pry off the spell shield, Pop traps Sigma to a wall and tries to finish him off with a Madroa spell. Sigma surprises Pop by detaching his arm and escaping. Apparently he can detach body parts. From his now handless arm, Sigma unleashes his lightning buster attack into poor Pop, because not only can he detach body parts, but he has the surprise lightning buster cannon in one of his arms. Sigma is shocked that Pop can keep withstanding his attacks, but then he sees that Pop is using full heal spells on himself. As he's done before, Pop is able to use the spell for the first time under pressure of being in a battle. Pop then appears to fire a Madroa spell at the mirror, hoping to bounce it back at Sigma. The knight gets Pop in a hold, so he gets hit by the spell instead. Pop appears to be defeated, but it was actually a ruse. He made a Sizz spell look like a Madroa spell. By faking his defeat, Pop tricks Sigma into letting his guard down. Pop then fires off a real Madroa spell at close range, defeating his opponent. After the fight, Pop once again confesses his love to Mam and explains why he was unable to confess to the others about his problem with getting his insignia to glow. Mam is unsure of her feelings and asks Pop to give her a chance once the battle with Dark King Vern, hey Vern, is over. Pop and Mam meet up with Hyunkle, Leona, and Gomei-chan to find Hadlar and Dai in the middle of a fierce fight.
That's right. The Sigma fight here is a lot more fun than the Albinus fight, because Sigma is an honorable opponent. He's cool, actually cool. Pop and Sigma have a great respect for each other that continues even once Sigma has become mortally wounded. Their battle is very much a noble samurai style battle in how they treat and speak to each other. Now that he's gone, let's pour one out for our boy Siggy. As for the Pop and Mom discussion that comes after, afterwards, I like that they're finally talking about their feelings instead of keeping everything bottled up for the future. After Pop redeclares his love here, though, Mom asks him to let her give him a response. He then just keeps on talking, so the poor lady can't get a word in edgewise. Pop is a fairly self-centered dude, at least right here. Anyway, I'm glad the mom doesn't shoot him down outright. Asking him to wait and let her see how things go after the fight is a totally fair response.
I agree. Very reasonable. I really like seeing how this fight is even more of a battle of wits than the last fight. Pop shows his true ability, skill, and battle intelligence as a grand sorcerer, a title he gets from his master, who did not like the title of sage. Pop leaning in for a kiss for a fake out with Mam is not only funny, but shows that maybe she does have feelings for Pop. With the way Mam reacted, the big dummy probably could have actually gotten in a real kiss, but as he even admits, he was still not brave enough there to actually do it.
By the way, I approve of the Grand Sorcerer title. It makes Pop sound like a badass, even if he really is just a sage. Now then, episode 71, Battle of True Dragons. In this episode, we see Dai and Hadlar in a battle so fierce that nothing can get through the concentrated aura their battle is producing around them. As Dark King Vern watches the battle, it reminds him of a famous Battle of Dragons from the Underworld. Velzar, the Abyss Dragon, and Vorikus, the Lightning Dragon, also created a combined battle aura so mighty that it obliterated anything in its path. Velzar won, claiming the title of the Dragon King of the Abyss, and the battle itself became known as the Battle of True Dragons. That's the name of the episode. Back in the present, as the fight wears on, Dai realizes that he has to go all out in order to win, so he uses his new attack. He combines an Avonstrash arrow with an Avonstrash break to make an Avonstrash cross. Hadlar falls to the attack, but then he somehow recovers and throws Dai against a row of stairs, injuring him. Pop tries to intervene, but Dai refuses. Hadlar's sword has been broken, but Hadlar creates a life blade from his life force to take on Dai. It's pretty looking. To counter him, Dai infuses Zapple into his own sword. We end the episode with two warriors standing off once again.
While the fighting is mostly not super dynamic in this episode, the story of the two dragons is pretty interesting, and so is Hadlar's self-reflection. He realizes why he was insufficient as a leader to the six Dark Army Legion commanders and how he was much more inspiring to his royal guard. I did say the fighting in this episode wasn't really dynamic, but I do love the Avonstrash cross. That was a great moment of Dai using perfect timing on his two most powerful attacks. That is how you strash it up, as we say here on All Trades DQ Media Abbey. Finally, will this Velzar, the Dragon King of the Abyss, come into play later, or was he just some monster of the underworld's ancient past? Or maybe both.
Velzar is a drunkard. That's neither here nor there. I'm a little fuzzy on this, but I believe Velzar was first mentioned a while back as having been defeated by Baron.
Yes, you are correct.
Woo! The impenetrable, concentrated aura thing at the start of Dai and Hadlar's fight is a cool idea. That said, this episode has way too much of Dai's friends standing around and talking about the fight. There's a nice flashback of things that Dai has done at one point when they're trying to convince Pop not to be an interfering loser, because he totally wants to be an interfering loser. It's pretty unnecessary, but I did like the glimpse of the early days on Dermline Island. At this point in the series, we're stuck in a long sequence of boss fights, which makes me pine for the smaller adventures like the ones that the series opened with. Anyway, characters standing around commentating on a long fight is totes filler material, and I could do without it. Well, the fight sort of wraps up, but then Hadlar gets right back up. That's a pretty video gamey thing for a boss to do, I suppose. I do like how Hadlar thinks of his fallen royal guard as he prepares to fight Dai one last time for the last time. One last time.
One last time for the last time. I'll get you next time for the last time. Okay, so next we are going to go over and start our review of Rooming with a Gamer Gal. Before we dive into our review of this manga, a little introduction.
Wait, what about episode 72? We told everyone in the last podcast episode that we'd be covering four Dai episodes this time.
True, but that was before we discovered Gamer Gal and decided to put that into the podcast as well. Ain't nobody got time for four episodes anymore, Paul.
If you say so. I just hope we don't upset any loyal listeners who came here expecting four episodes.
I think we're good, okay? But, you know, if feel free to send any complaints to slimetimepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay. Hold on. I'm typing my email. Just kidding. Rooming with the Gamer Gal is a long-running manga that Square Enix has been publishing since 2014. That's 10 years, baby. It's written by manga veteran Renjiro Kindaichi.
Not to be confused with Hanging Out with a Gamer Girl, which, yes, I discovered was an entirely different manga when researching this one. Rooming with a Gamer Gal is about two roommates who bond over playing Dragon Quest X together.
Square Enix runs an English-language manga app called Manga Up that has been releasing chapters of this manga since December 25th of last year.
Merry Christmas to all! While Square Enix was very publicly closing down the global version of Dragon Quest Tact during the Christmas season, they started shadow dropping this Dragon Quest X related manga.
Gotta take the good with the bad with those guys.
Mm.
As is the Square Enix way, their advertising for the Dragon Quest series is very fragmented outside of Japan, whatever kind of Dragon Quest we're talking about. Different companies sometimes pick up different rights for the related Dragon Quest manga and anime, but there's no central hub that advertises it all.
Admittedly, Manga Up is a service that specifically hosts manga series published by Square Enix, as Square Enix does have a manga publishing arm. But it's still odd that they wouldn't promote this anywhere else.
In this case, it seems likely that the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing.
It's even more odd that we're getting a manga that has direct ties to Dragon Quest X, a game we don't have.
There are no plans for a worldwide release.
Yeah, and for the record, Dragon Quest X is the Dragon Quest MMO. It's the only numbered Dragon Quest that has never been released in English markets.
Yes, sir. That is true, unfortunately.
That begs the question, do you need to be familiar with Dragon Quest X to enjoy this manga?
It turns out that you don't. Whenever specifics of the game are brought up, it is thoroughly explained for anyone who might not be familiar with the game, with just maybe one exception that I've seen so far.
The manga is more about the relationship of the protagonist and his roommate, using their love of Dragon Quest X as a thing they bond over.
Indeed. Now that you know what you are getting into, let's start a review with Chapter 1, called Server 1. It begins with Hocus Pocus. In this first chapter, or server, as the manga calls them, we start with an introduction to the protagonist. She goes by the name of Powder and explains how she gets hooked on Dragon Quest X, despite the bad stereotypes she had heard about MMORPGs. In the game, she joins a team named Heaven Slime and makes a lot of new friends. We eventually find out that she is actually a he. In the game, he plays as a female poppet, but is really a girl, or G-I-R-L. Internet slang for guy in real life. As Powder gets to know one of his new Dragon Quest X friends, Goro, he finds out that Goro wants to move closer to his workplace and that his lease is coming up soon. Powder offers to rent out one of the extra bedrooms where he lives, an Asian-style house that his grandfather owns but is not currently being used. They agree to be roommates and set up a first meeting in person. However, it turns out that Goro is not actually a guy like his Dragon Quest X character. Goro is actually a girl. We learn that Powder's real name is Takumi Satsuki. Once Takumi sees that Goro is a girl, the chapter ends with him dodging her and starting to freak out about this misunderstanding.
So before I get real specific, I just want to say that girl is a dumb acronym. Here's what's dumb about it.
I tried to look it up, and maybe it's like a Japan-only type of slang, because I don't think Western gamers use that whatsoever. At least not as far as I could tell.
Yeah, well, I hope it's Japan-only, because...
Or I don't even know. I mean, it could have even been invented for this manga, because I don't know enough about Japanese gaming culture to know if that's actually a thing. So it could have been specifically for this story. I have no idea.
There's no telling. But there's not. It is a bad acronym because the G could stand for either of the two expected states. It could stand for guy or girl. So it's just a bad acronym. It's like, you know, they say one thing and the other person interprets it as the other, because it's just a G. It could be either one, so it's goofy.
And hilarity ensues, at least in this manga.
That is true. The comic opens with the cutesy Powder character sitting in a realistic Japanese bedroom. It took me a couple of pages to realize that the protagonist's avatar is being depicted in the real world. That's a memorable way to introduce readers to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
The issue's main premise is that Powder and Goro are moving in together without ever having exchanged photos or met in any capacity in real life. Here in America, that's a pretty far-fetched thing to do. The kind of of thing that would only have happened in the early days of the internet.
Yes, because like for my personal example, like I've like known people online for years and then I've met them in real life. Like the most extreme example would be I went to Winnipeg to a anime convention and I shared a room with someone who I'd never met in real life, a hotel room. So, you know, I was thinking, well, hopefully he's not like a serial killer or weird or something because we're sharing a hotel room. But to actually like lease an apartment together or to like lease out a room without meeting that person, I mean, I guess that could happen. I mean, people do rent out rooms without necessarily meeting them in person first, I guess, maybe. I don't know. I don't have enough experience with being a person that is living in an abandoned or an extra Asian style house with multiple rooms and being like, hey, you can come live here in this extra room I got. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Well, it's very impractical. And at the very least, wouldn't you talk on the phone or voice chat first?
Although yes.
This did happen 10 years ago, so voice chat would have been less of a common option, but still.
That's true. Yeah, and you'd want to, because in the manga, like, she already has the move set up and all that stuff. You would want to have the in-person meet first. Like, you'd meet at a coffee shop first before you would actually, like, pull the trigger on the move. So I agree with you there.
Yeah. So maybe that kind of thing is more common in Japan, but I bet it's not too common there either. I would hope not. It's just it's a slightly zany premise that we have to roll with so that the story can happen.
True.
Although the art starts out quite cutesy with realistic backgrounds, an artistic issue rears its head at the end of the issue. These characters have freakishly long arms. More on that later. By the way, I've never played Dragon Quest X, but I'm following the manga's brief descriptions of the game just fine so far.
Oh, and I'm in the same boat. I've never played it before either. So I'm like, except for one scene that I'm about to point out, like it's been pretty fluid in terms of like explaining to people how it works and I'm not confused at all. So it's been nice in that way.
Right on.
I thought the introduction chapter was really cute. I like how they keep the mystery of both characters up by showing them as their Dragon Quest X characters in real life until they see each other in person for the first time. It was fun to see Takumi's Poppet character Powder just kind of casually bebopping around the world. I thought that was fun. I saw in the comments for the app for the manga that someone pointed out that the spell Zin, Z-I-N, was a translation error as it should have been Zing, Z-I-N-G. However, they were wrong. Zin is a real spell that was introduced in Dragon Quest X. It's a less reliable version of Zing. You thought a 50% chance of revival was bad? Dragon Quest X said, hold my beer and watch this. Of course, most Western fans probably aren't going to know about Zin. It has mostly appeared in games we don't have, such as Dragon Quest X, Dragon Quest Walk, and Dragon Quest Champions. However, it did appear in the global version of Dragon Quest of the Stars as an ability from the Rune Staff, a Dragon Quest X version of that weapon, because that particular staff shows up in earlier games as well. That would be the only time it's been seen in the West. As mentioned in our intro for this manga, it does a good job of explaining the Dragon Quest X world. With few exceptions, I don't think anyone would be lost about what is going on in this story. The only panel, the specific example I have for this, I think that would be confusing for people who don't game or don't play Dragon Quest X, would be that one panel where Powder mentions Rando Rezzers, where it shows someone trying to revive her with Zin. Overall, I thought it was very interesting, and it got me hooked to read more.
Yeah, about that particular panel, I had to use a little context, but I play a little Final Fantasy 14, which is another Japanese MMO, although it's available in English, and you can die and have nobody around to revive you. You know, like everyone doesn't have an easy way to revive people like in like you would get in most American developed games. So it just seemed to me that like a Rando Rezzer is somebody who does happen to have that ability and they go around reviving people even though you wouldn't expect them to do that. I think that's what's going on there.
Oh no. So when they say Rando Rezzer, they mean the spells in Dragon Quest that don't guarantee that you get revived. So like the Zin and the Zing, where it's not 100% that you're going to get revived. So Rando as in random, Rezzers as in like revival. So that's what that means.
Well, yeah, that's how they I mean that's how you revive. But it seemed to be that it was an unexpected act of kindness, like that the main character did not know that player who revived him. Didn't you get that impression
too? You know, I could see where you're coming from on that as well. I just thought it meant like Rando Rezzers, like is like those random spells, not random spells, but those spells that randomly will revive you. Like you only have a 50% chance of being revived with Zing or Zin, where it's like even less than that kind of deal.
Yeah, so I guess it could work either way.
Yeah, and but now even between us who are like gaming aficionados, I say that jokingly, but you know, even us, we're a little confused on that panel. So that's like, it's a good example of where that could have used a little more explanation.
Indeed. But it is just one panel. So it's the kind of thing you read and you just move on right past it.
Exactly. It's just one throwaway panel. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah. Now then, let's talk about Server 2, their first day. In this chapter, Takumi gathers up the courage to introduce himself to Goro, who to his surprise and dread is a Gyaru style girl. Gyarus are girls with bleached hair who often have spray tans and behave in a stereotypical, sometimes unpleasant way. Apparently, Takumi was tormented by Gyarus in high school. He tries to convince Goro to change her moving plans because of the gender misunderstanding, but she still insists on moving in and reminds him that he invited her in the first place. Finally, Goro tries to defuse the situation by suggesting they play some Dragon Quest X.
Any chapter that ends with the suggestion of playing Dragon Quest is tops in my book. You know, poor Takumi can't convince Goro to leave. At first, I was going to be annoyed if they were going to play the awkward guy trope of not being able to handle living in the same place as a girl. Oh no, a girl, I can't handle it. But as it turns out, he's more concerned because she is a Garu style girl, a type of girl that endlessly tormented him for being nerdy in high school. And that also changed my perception of what a Garu girl is in Japan. So I looked up that Garu is actually a transliteration of the English slang word gal, which also explains the manga's title. I was only familiar with like the extreme version of the Garu style that included Japanese women with a very dark tan, very long and decorative nails, and very, very heavy makeup. But according to the manga, it's women who are into any combination of flashy makeup, hair, and clothing styles. I also observed that this manga started out in 2014, so it makes sense they are actually using a Wii U to play Dragon Quest X. It will be interesting to see what system they switch to later on. Get it? Switch to? Anyways, the server cover is adorable with the sleepy slime. Oh, I love the little sleepy slime. I love it. This starts the trend of pictures of Powder's introduction to Estoria. Estoria being the world in which Dragon Quest X takes place. Future server covers will have various pictures from when Powder was first discovering the game and what it had to offer.
You mentioned the traditional perception of Garus as being tanned and heavily made up. Mm-hmm. The only way that Goro visually differs from the stereotype is that she doesn't seem to be tanned. She definitely has the blonde hair and fancy clothing style.
True. It doesn't seem like, I've just seen like the super extreme examples that like the really flashy clothing and the really, I mean, she's definitely got some flashy, you know, hairstyle and clothing going on, but not to the extreme example I've seen in pictures in the past.
One thing that she does not have, at least in the first two chapters that we're discussing today, is a real name. We learn Takumi's full name, but not Goro's. I hope she tells him soon. In the interest of realism, if I may criticize the artwork once again, Goro's head is sometimes drawn as tinier than it should be. Both her and Takumi have these long, board-like arms. Her hands are pretty large, too. In a lot of panels, they look pretty normal, but sometimes these odd proportions show up. It'll be interesting to see if the artist's style evolves over time.
I didn't really notice that myself, but now I'll probably look at the future chapters and it will just stick out to me. But I do agree with you that it was odd that she never introduces herself with her actual name, at least maybe her first name or family name or something. I mean, that's like basic. That's like basic. Hey, my name is so-and-so. I'm your roommate now. There's like, who knows who she is? It's funny that she doesn't like say any kind of name at all.
Yeah. And it's part of the wacky premise concept, you know, like we're going to have to roll with some of that, but still, I don't want them to stretch believability too far. So they should take care of that quickly, I hope.
Right. Yes. Hopefully.
Story-wise, things are fun so far. We should have a slow burn romance with lots of fun gaming culture to look forward to in future issues.
As an aside, Manga Up uses a point-based system so you can actually read a lot of manga for free. If you are impatient, you can pay with money for extra points. It's a very interesting system. They actually also have a subscription option as well, unlimited reading for $4.99 a month. So happy reading, everyone.
That's not a bad price. Mm-mm. That's all for this episode of All Trades DQ Media Abbey. If you want to prepare for our next episode, be sure to watch episodes 72 to 74 of Dragon Quest The Adventure of Dai and read chapters 3 and 4 of Rooming with a Gamer Gal. You can watch the Dai episodes subtitled on Crunchyroll or dubbed on Hulu. And Rooming with a Gamer GamerGal is available through the Manga Up app.
We're a nonprofit podcast. We won't confuse the gender of your hard-earned gold when we can offer you quality content for free. But if you do have some extra gold that's just completely burning a hole in your wallet, pouch, bottomless bag, treasure chest, or grandfather's gigantic Asian-style spare house, and you would like to donate anything to a website that's been supporting Dragon Quest fans for over 25 years, stop by the Dragon's Den by clicking the link in the show notes. There are several ways to support the Den, including the affiliate links that don't cost you anything extra when making other Dragon Quest purchases.
We even have a Slime Time t-shirt that was designed by our resident artist, Dwayne. See the link for it in the show notes.
As part of the Slime Time Extended Universe, or STU, you can direct comments or questions for the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at DQ Slime Time.
And you can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/EastXTwitch. Come watch me play a variety of games every Saturday, kids.
Join in tons of Dragon Quest discussion at the Dragon's Den forums or Discord and the Dragon Questers Facebook group.
We'd like to thank everyone that made this podcast possible, including Pendy, Woodus, the Dragon's Den, and Jake Gyllenhaal, who proved himself to be the ultimate badass in Amazon's Roadhouse remake.
Roundhouse. Please like, subscribe, and write a review for the podcast.
Didn't you mean to say Roadhouse?
Oh, yeah. Damn it. Yes, I did. Roadhouse. Please like, subscribe, and write a review for the podcast.
We'll catch you later, everybody. Don't hate. Appreciate.
Time to zoom on out of here.
This is Slime Time! General Flazzard here! Beware my five-finger flares!